You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca, Alberta's only regulated online gambling website. Use the promo code, and you get a new one every month, Greger50, and you'll get a free $50 play only at PlayAlberta.ca.
Ty, what's going on today?
Not much, boys. What's going on in the 1440 world?
Not too much. I'm still getting used to the name change, but haven't butchered it too poorly yet. For you doing the show every day, has there been any hiccups? You just stick with O-N-E?
We're lucky because we get to keep running with O-N-E, but I 1,000% started my show yesterday with Welcome into Oilers Nation every day. So it's just one of those things, and you know from hosting shows, it's muscle memory, right? Like the intro plays, I do my little joke, I hear the sound of the lead, and then I say, Welcome to Oilers Nation every day, and I've done that for 4 years, so that's 1,000 shows or whatever it is, 800 shows. It's like, it's just wired in your brain, so it takes a lot to kind of get it out.
I am going to always struggle because we became just the Frenzy earlier on in the day. Yeah. So our fantasy football league, like for me to try to say the Frenzy's fantasy football league rather than Fantasy Frenzy's fantasy league, it's been a mouthful. It's been tough. We're trying to get through it. But yeah, I understand a little bit what you're going through here, but love the rebranding, and really everything stays the same. So if anyone's freaking out, don't. It's not that big of a deal. Ty, we're getting you on a little bit early today because you're going to be doing some pregame show for the Jays who take on the Rays tonight. Max Scherzer gets the call to the mound. We're going to have that one on our AM feed following the Jason Greger Show at 6 o'clock. But the Toronto Blue Jays, as of late, like winning series, doing what they have to do, clawing their way back into it, and playing some good baseball in the process. And I, you know, call me crazy, but I still think there's room for improvement with this team.
Oh, there totally is. Like, this is not a climb up the standings that was built with a 10-game winning streak or something like that. And don't get me wrong, you know, a month ago, 3 weeks ago, it kind of felt like that's what they would need to get back in this, was a 10-game winning streak. But everyone around them has just stayed so mediocre. Like, in their last 10 games, they're 7-3, and they've been 7-3 in their last 10 for a while now. Guardians are 4-6, Twins are 4-6, Rangers are 4-6, Tigers 4-6, Orioles 5-5. Like, they've gained 2 to 3 games on all of these teams just in the last 10, 11 days here. So it hasn't been this, you know, feeling that it's an unsustainable heater that's dragged them back into the mix. It's like, no, you're watching them win games and kind of going like, hey, I know that there's still better baseball in this team. And getting that win last night at the Trop, which is a house of horrors for this franchise, going back to the very beginning of when Tampa Bay had a team, like getting that win last night was a bit of an exhale, because this week with the Rays and Yankees back to back on the road, I was a little nervous that this might be the week where, okay, that was a fun, again, 3 weeks there where they played pretty good. It's going to come off the rails this week. But if that doesn't happen, man, they don't play a single team above 500 for the rest of the season after this week. If they survive this week, look out.
Yeah, absolutely. And like big series against the Orioles to wrap up the season, or second last series of the season. It's going to be super exciting. And I saw a tweet. It was like, the loss is hurt again. The Jays are back. Like, for a while there, they were out of it, just, you know, kind of moving on. But now when they lose, like, okay, it matters. They have to find ways to just keep on winning baseball games. Max Scherzer gets the call tonight to the bump. As of late, just looking at his stats here, you know, he's given 5 strong innings. The earned runs at most has been 2 in his last 3 starts, going back to his last 4 starts, actually. How confident are you in him tonight?
Yeah, look, I'm always uneasy when Max Scherzer takes the mound because he's 42 years old, and we know the struggles earlier this season, maybe tied a bit or a lot to injury. But since he's come back, to your point, he's been excellent. What kind of concerns me is the guy on the other side of the rubber, Drew Rasmussen, is if this guy pitched in a bigger market, he would be a household name, one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's that good. You load up his Baseball Savant page, he's 99th percentile in pitching run value. He doesn't walk guys. He has elite strikeout stuff. Like, everything he does is good. If it wasn't for the years that guys like Cease and Schlittler were having, I mean, Rasmussen probably does have a pretty good case to be number 3 in that Cy Young conversation this year. So the guy on the other end is that good for the Tampa Bay Rays. But if you want a positive for tonight with the Blue Jays, like, yes, Max Scherzer has been pitching well as of late. Also, blowing out the Rays yesterday, an off day the day before that, your high leverage guys haven't pitched now in 2 or 3 games for most of them. So even if Mad Max can only give you 5 and can keep this thing tight, and if the offense chips away, you should be in a position where Miles, Rogers, Varland, your last 3 innings, your 3 big dogs are all healthy and rested tonight.
So when you look at Rasmussen, obviously great record, low ERA, like you said, if it's not for some of these other guys and maybe playing in a bigger market, might be more of a household name. What's the plan of attack? Is there a way you can get to him?
Yeah, when you look through his stuff, the only number that isn't in like the 70th or higher percentile in terms of, you know, his fastball, his breaking ball value, all of that stuff, his whiff rate is a little bit low. So you even saw yesterday in the way they picked apart Nick Martinez, who is another guy whose numbers are probably good enough to have him in the Cy Young conversation on most years. The way they worked against him was like Alejandro Kirk would foul off three or four pitches, right? And you just kind of work your way through an at bat, get his pitch count high. And honestly, with Rasmussen, it's one of those games where I don't think you're trying to score five or six runs to get him out of the game. You're just plugging your nose every time you go up to the plate going, it's going to be ugly and we need to just foul off pitches, stay in this for as long as we can, and hopefully just get him out of the game by the sixth inning so we can attack their bullpen. The only number that's not really truly elite is his whiff percentage. So again, if you're a good bat on ball team, which the Blue Jays have been as of late, they should be able to kind of hang around here and fight in at bats, because you're not going to light up Drew Rasmussen, but you can hope to get him out of the game quick.
Tyler Yaremchuk of Daily Faceoff Edmonton joining us here on the Jason Gregor Show. Connor Halley sitting in for the vacationing Jason. I want to ask you, season long, what have you thought of the job that John Schneider has done for the team?
I think it's just so easy to hate on a baseball manager, because when there's a bad decision, you can like so directly point it to them. You know, like in a hockey game, if a defenseman makes an error with 8 minutes left and it winds up in the back of the net, nobody really sits there and goes, well, what was he doing on the ice with 8 minutes left? When a manager goes to a reliever in the sixth inning and he gives up a three-run home run, everyone loves to point and go, why did he put that guy in the game? Why didn't he put that other guy in the game? Like, there's just so many easy ways to apply hindsight when critiquing a manager that I think it's just a little bit too much of low-hanging fruit when a team's playing bad to point to them and go, well, they got to fire the manager. This manager is a bozo, blah, 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 blah. With that being said, I like Schneider, and I've always been very pro Schneider. That's obviously the way this answer is going to lean. I look at that clip yesterday of him with his arm around Jose Soriano and they're laughing. I watched the behind the scenes thing they did the other day as a team with him working the radar gun while they determine their fantasy football order, which was awesome, by the way. Like, I look at the way he interacts with Max Scherzer and Vladdy and all of these different pieces on the team that are all like wildly different personalities. That's a big part of a manager's job, is managing these egos and these personalities over 162 games. So the short of it is, I think he's fantastic at managing those personalities and being, you know, one of the guys in the clubhouse with this team. And I think his decision-making, the people who critique it, it's often overblown and just using hindsight. Like, yeah, sometimes does he bring in the wrong bullpen arm? Does he do something where you maybe raise an eyebrow? Sure. Every manager is going to do that. I think the Blue Jays, honestly, and if this gets clipped, I'm sure it'll get ratioed to hell on Twitter or X, but like, I think the Blue Jays are generally pretty lucky to have a manager like John Schneider.
Yeah, I mean, geez, the success they had last year, I think he was so beloved by baseball fans. The speeches he would give after the series were incredible. It's a tough gig, and you're right. Like, I don't think other coaches necessarily get the flack that a manager for a baseball team does, so I thought that was a good point.
To even build on that a little bit, like, I saw someone was going viral the other day for the wrong reasons of being like, man, this Varland guy's good. It's a shame John Schneider didn't have the brains to use him in the playoffs last year. It's like, did you watch the Louis Varland? Every time he touched the mound was giving up solo home runs. Like, Jeff Hoffman was electric. He was nails that entire postseason run. I think about John Schneider making the moves that he did in that series against Seattle in the ALCS, where it's Kevin Gausman coming into the game in game seven out of relief. He started and pivoted to use Bassett as an eighth inning guy for a little bit. You know why he was doing things like bringing Gausman and Bassett into the game? Because Louis Varland wasn't particularly trustworthy last year. So again, like, the hindsight thing of when people look back at that playoff run and they're like, oh, Jeff Hoffman cost them the game in the ninth inning. It's like, do you forget Jeff Hoffman striking out Julio Rodriguez in the top of the ninth, two outs to punch their ticket to the World Series? Like, that getting through, I think he had to pitch four or five outs at Yankee Stadium to finish off the ALDS. Like, again, it's just easy in baseball to have a very selective memory. And when people criticize Schneider, I just think that's all it is.
Yeah, yeah. And then you cherry pick stats, and then someone like you can just call them out for everything else they might have missed. So that's why we like getting you on here, Tyler. A couple more questions for you. One more for the Blue Jays. I just want to ask you, with this string of good play, has there been a player, an individual, a storyline that has stood out to you?
I mean, the easiest answer to this one is Brett Bateman, the guy they got in the deal with the Chicago Cubs for Kevin Gausman. Also, Gausman's gone there, and he's really struggled. But Bateman's been hitting in the leadoff spot. If you've paid any attention to how Dalton Varsho's playing with the Houston Astros since getting traded, I think he's something like 6-49 or something like that. Like, he's been brutal. And Bateman's come in, and he's just your traditional scrappy leadoff hitter. He'll lay down a bunt. He'll leg out an infield base hit. He's got tremendous bat-to-ball skills, which I think the guys hitting behind him, when you're facing a Nick Martinez or a Drew Rasmussen or a Cam Schlittler, and your leadoff guy goes up there and fights off four or five pitches and throws in an eight-pitch at-bat, and you really get to see the pitcher, like, I think that's something the guys hitting behind him value. And the one thing that Blue Jays fans are going to learn to love with this guy is he is a truly, truly elite center fielder. Like, Dalton Varsho was as well. He could track down balls. He didn't have a very good arm. Bateman has a better arm than Dalton Varsho. But Bateman, with his elite speed and his ability to track balls, is like a plus, plus, plus defender in center field. And I think that's going to make him a Blue Jay for a long time. There's been a long, long line of Blue Jays who, just by being good defenders in the outfield, think of Kevin Pillar, have bought themselves a lot of time with this fan base. And I think Bateman is just like a Kevin Pillar, with honestly probably a bit of a better bat.
Tyler Yemchuk of Daily Faceoff Edmonton joining us here. And just, you know, you talk about the new players coming to this team, and there's been a couple, I think, that have really endeared themselves early on to the Jays fan base. Do you think something changed, kind of just like a exhale, okay, the trade deadline's come and gone, this is the team now, maybe something changed just with their mindset going out there onto the field?
I really wouldn't be surprised if it was like a little bit of a whirlwind feeling the last couple of weeks leading up to the deadline, where, like, okay, everyone kind of knew, no matter how good they played, Gausman's getting traded. Everyone kind of knew Varsho's getting traded, and a bunch of other guys would have been on pins and needles. George Springer probably had some decisions to make when the team was coming to him, being like, do you want to finish out the year here, or do you want to go win somewhere? And through that kind of, I'll call it a 2-week lead up to the trade deadline, they somehow managed to only really be 3, 4, 5 games back. Then it started to trend closer to 3. And I really think that once the deadline passed and it was like, okay, the guys who are here and in the room, we know we're all staying in the room. And now you kind of have no choice but to fight. And then when you're done and your head's above water after all the noise of the trade deadline, and you look and you go, holy smokes, we're 3 games out of a playoff spot. Like, we can absolutely turn this thing around and get going. I just think it's really been a breath of fresh air, just getting through the mud of the trade deadline and being at a point where you go, man, if we just win 7 of our next 10 and keep on doing that and keep chugging along the way we are, we're going to be a playoff team again.
Ty, we're a month away from preseason hockey. September 19th, the preseason will get going for the Oilers. So a question for you, and I know we're still in the dog days, but what is going into training camp, one thing that excites you about this group and one thing that might concern you a little?
I'm excited to see the young guys, for sure. Like, you know, development, this is the old low tide line that he used to use when I was on his show. Like, development's never linear. I think back to, you know, when we watched Ethan Bear and Caleb Jones do what they did for a few years in Edmonton, or a year and a half, and we all went, whew, young guys who are ready to take that next step. And then they just kind of never did. Like, just because a player shows good flashes early on, it never means they're going to be a good or great player for the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years. But with that being said, right, like, I liked what Josh Samansky did in a limited sample last season. I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm excited to see how Ike Howard looks coming off what should be a pretty important offseason. Does Matt Savoy have another step in him? All of these guys, even Pod Colson, I think because he's been here for a couple of years and he's been in the NHL for kind of 4 seasons, we forget that he's still a very, very young player. And if you watch the videos of him ripping around training with his skills coach, and those videos always seem to make the rounds, like, he's always a guy who is, like, you know, seems to be working really hard to improve himself. So I'm excited for those young guys, because I think all, like, obviously Pod Colson and Savoy are going to be on the team. Like, that's a no question. But, like, Samansky and Howard, that's your fourth line center. That's potentially a top 6 left winger for you in an area where you're pretty weak. Like, those two guys have a chance to come in and claim really important jobs. And then the only thing that makes me nervous is, like, okay, what if Josh Samansky isn't ready for that full-time job? What if he doesn't take the step forward? Do they don't really have another option. Do they look at bringing in? I wrote today at dailyfaceoffedmonton.com. That's weird to say, but I wrote today about PTO candidates. Like, why would you not look at maybe bringing in a Curtis Lazar or a Luke Glendening on a 1-year deal or on a PTO, just in case just in case Josh Samansky isn't ready to go? And when it comes to Ike Howard, you know, what if we get a week or two into training camp and it's like, you know what? We actually don't think he's ready to start the season here. All of a sudden, the Oilers need some top six help. Is that where they start to revisit a Vlad Tarasenko conversation? So I'm excited for the youth, but I'm also kind of recognizing that they got some young players in some really important spots in this lineup, and it's never a guarantee that a young guy just comes in and is magically better than they were the last year.
The PTO conversation. That tells me hockey's getting closer, Ty. That's what that tells me. Before we let you go here, Buffalo Bills training camp rolling on here. We've had a few guests on the station the last few days. How are you feeling about the squad this year? We had a Patriots guest yesterday, and I will say I disagreed that thought it's the Patriots division. I still think it goes through Buffalo, but how are you feeling about the team right now? And the upcoming season, is the defense going to be bouncing back, you think?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about the defense. I'm excited to see what a guy like DJ Moore can do with Josh Allen. Last time Josh Allen had, you know, prime Stephon Diggs, you think about the teams they had and how close they got. So as far as the division, I still think the Bills deserve to be the favorites. I know they didn't win it last year, but and sometimes this conversation gets overblown because you can only beat who's in front of you. But the New England Patriots had a soft schedule last year, and like, there's truth to that. As much as it isn't the whole conversation, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, they got gifted first place. Like, no, you still have to go out and beat those teams. But how do the Patriots handle a tougher schedule this year? I think there's always a letdown when you're that young, up-and-coming, scrappy team who proves their doubters wrong 1 year. And then next year, you got a bit of a target on your back. We saw the Bills go through that for a little bit as well. So I do still think if I had to put money on it, I'm not sure what play Alberta has the odds at. I'd be betting on the Buffalo Bills to win the division. I understand I'm a homer in saying that, but I do think that's schedule factor with the Patriots. They might be in for a bit of a rude awakening this year.
I think I'm with you. That fourth spot schedule, it's just a little bit easier. And, you know, one or two wins can sway the division. So I think I'm with you, and I trust Josh Allen way too much. So yeah. If he's got the ball there down by a score, I believe he's going to find a way to get the job done. Ty, thanks for hopping on early today. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.